Hi, everybody. This week's edition of Daily Coast, The Brief. It's our weekly show about politics. I'm Marcos Melitzis. I am here with Carrie Alleveld. And we're going to be talking about what else? Donald Trump, Joe Biden.
Who else? What would we talk about?
The most consequential election in our lifetime. And it will be until MAGA is defeated. So we're in for a ride. Carrie, so a couple of weeks ago, Trump was convicted. He's now a convicted felon. And
that was just last week.
No, last week. Are you kidding me?
It was just last week. I mean, I know. Isn't it like it's always a time warp, right? It was legit last week. And now it feels like, there is a sense among liberals. It's like, well, we always knew he was a felon. We just needed the conviction, right? We just needed the conviction.
I thought it was 2 weeks ago.
I know.
Oh, my God. These next 6 months are going to be like 3 years at this pace. So, you know, it's been really interesting post-verdict, though. There's been a bunch of polling that have shown, asked people what they think about the polling, if it's going to change their voting intentions.
These polls, there have been several of them showing that, you know, I mean, voters are thinking about this, right? We have a convicted felon on the, you know, the ticket now, right? I mean, assuming that the Republicans go through with nominating him, which seems to be a complete lock because the Republicans have hook, line, and sinker backed him up on this and said, you know, this is a miscarriage of justice and all this stuff. And, you know, we're a banana republic now because someone can, you know, former president can be held to account for committing crimes. So that's the way the justice system is supposed to work. But anyway, so there have been a number of these polls. And in one of them, nearly 50% of independents wanted Trump to drop out. That's not going to happen. But that was what one of them said. In another one, 1 in 10 Republicans, this was the Ipsos poll done for Reuters, and 1 in 10 Republicans and 1/4 of independents said they would be less likely to vote for Trump following his conviction. Now, not all of those voters are going to wholesale, you know, go against Trump. But if you lose, you know, I don't know, if it's 1 in 10 Republicans and you lose even a small portion of that, that could be the difference in a swing state. If it's 1/4 of independents who are less likely to vote for Trump following conviction, and he loses even a small part of small share of that 1/4 of independents, that's a huge difference. And I'll add one more thing. We've got Marcos back. There was a focus group conducted over the weekend by Sarah Longwell, who's we've had on, friend of the pod. And she is, you know, she conducts these focus groups of two-time Trump voters. I mean, she does all kinds of focus groups, but this one over the weekend, two-time Trump voters, and they were already sort of feeling a little iffy about Trump. You know, they have this queasy feeling, and what do they do now that they're processing this felony conviction? And 5 of the 9 said that they were less likely voting for Trump and actually said, they at this point think they'll probably vote for Biden. So that's a big, I mean, that's not a poll, but that is a big number of people in a 9-person two-time Trump voter focus group. Okay.
So the one thing I will add from a math perspective, Donald Trump has never gotten 47% of the vote. Like, this is mind-boggling. In his first election, 2016, he barely got 46%. And in 2020, he got 46.8%, I believe was the final number. So he's already running at a distinct disadvantage. His support is amongst a minority of the American voters. Now, obviously, the election isn't decided nationally. It's decided in key states. But again, 47% is sort of kind of a, if he hit 47%, he'd probably be looking pretty good. Carrie, what has he done in the last 4 years to build on that base of support? I would argue that because of COVID, he's killed off a big chunk of his supporters. And his supporters are older, just generically. It's older, whiter, more rural base. So there's more more exiting of the electorate, to put it politely. And he has further alienated suburban college-educated white voters, which are actually the only real swing constituency right now. So he has done everything possible to alienate or kill off his supporters. And you get situations like I was going to say 2 weeks ago, but maybe it was last week again. Last week, where he spoke to the Libertarian Convention. And it was an insanely hostile crowd. People were yelling and screaming at it. And Trump lost his composure on stage. And but they know that they need to expand their base of support because their core base is shrinking, right? So when you have a poll that comes out, three polls that come out and say that he may lose 10% of his own party, 10 to 17%, depending on the poll, mm-hmm. that you may lose almost half of independents. And he's not going to lose that many, just to be very, very clear. But 10% of that, I think you were saying that, like 10% of that sliver, if he loses 1% or 2% of Republicans, if he loses 4% or 5% of independents, that's it. That's the ballgame. He has no room for error. He won in 2016 because everything went right for him. Literally everything. Any of these individual factors would have happened. Hillary Clinton would have won. Everything had to go right. He did not get that in 2020. I don't see he could. I mean, there is obviously a possibility. And there are some wild cards, like, you know, Robert Kennedy Jr. as an independent, and will Cornel West take black votes in Detroit and imperil Michigan? There's wild cards. I'm not going to say, nobody's saying Biden has this thing. But Trump's math is incredibly, incredibly difficult. So losing that any kind of support is incredibly dangerous. So I think this takes us to like sort of the meat of this episode, which really is, how is the Biden campaign and its allies using the criminal conviction to sort of shift the narrative and to maybe even solidify or validate some of those people that are feeling a little squeamish right now about voting for a convicted felon? And Carrie, I know you've been you've been writing about this, thinking about this a lot. So I'm going to kick it over to you.
So this is me over here just, chomping at the bit to get into this discussion. There's two points that I want to make, and they do converge. They kind of play off of each other. I think, let's talk about the Biden campaign building a permission structure for even before Trump got convicted. I mean, no one could have anticipated that. But a couple weeks before that, the Biden campaign put out a political memo laying out not only its debate strategy, but what it plans to do. And while they did that, they released this ad called Snapped. Okay. And I'm going to set it up here in a second. We'll listen to it. It's if people have heard about it, they've probably heard about it because Robert De Niro, the actor Robert De Niro, very famous, he narrated it. But the main point of it is that it talks about how he lost the 2020 election and Trump
lost,
losing,
not De Niro.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, sorry. Trump losing the 2020 election was a breaking point for him, right? There's a before and after in this narrative. Now, I know liberals out there are like, there's no before and after. He's been crazy the whole time. He's always been a threat and a nut job and all that stuff, right? But what the Biden campaign is doing is building a permission structure for squishy Trump voters who like voted for him maybe 2016, maybe 2020, you know, or both of them. But they feel queasy. They just don't really like what's happening. They held their nose because they're Republicans and voted for him before. But now they just are feeling like squeamish about it, right? And what you do by telling people that there's a different Trump now than there was when they voted for him the first two times is you give them an out for changing their minds. You give them a framework for, oh yeah, I did that before, but now I see a difference. And let's go ahead and roll tape on that.
Wait, before we roll the tape. So I just really want to, permission structure, this is actually a very important term and it's a little sort of jargony. I mean, you sort of explained it, but the idea is that people do not change their political views. It does not happen. You cannot be like, you're a dumbass. Like, you were so stupid for voting for Donald Trump the first time. Now you need to see the light. That obviously is never going to work. And that actually entrenches people. So permission structure basically says it's okay. Like, and it's your choice. Like, things change. It's not your fault. So you have permission to change, right? So you see that all the time with people saying, like, I didn't leave the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left me, right? That's permission structure. And because nobody wants to say like I was wrong, literally right. Nobody. It's like the worst thing in the world to say I was wrong. But to say like, no, you haven't changed, dude. The other guy changed. That's giving them internal permission. Not like me and you, Carrie, giving them permission. It's they have to feel it inside them. Like I give myself permission. And it's not because I was wrong, but because other factors changed the equation. So that's what's happening here. And this is actually incredibly, I mean, it's obviously smart politics, but it's literally the only way that we can get people to convert, because there's no other way that people do that otherwise.
Yeah.
From midnight tweets to drinking bleach to tear gassing citizens and staging a photo op, we knew Trump was out of control when he was president. Then he lost the 2020 election and snapped, desperately trying to hold on to power. Now he's running again, this time threatening to be a dictator, to terminate the Constitution.
If I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath.
Trump wants revenge, and he'll stop at nothing to get it.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
My favorite part is drinking bleach. That's my favorite part.
They are so, and this is supposed to appeal to people, you know, like, look, if you believe that the 2020 election was stolen by Biden, you are never, ever going to be convinced to train. You are a Trump voter for life, right? For as long as he's on the ticket, you're voting for him. This is meant to appeal to people who are, you know, pretty tuned in. They were already, they were like, what? Drink bleach? What is he talking about? You know what I mean? So it's like they were already sort of like feeling like, I don't know about Trump. He just, you know, he does these late night tweets. I would just wish he wouldn't tweet. I mean, how often did we hear people say that, like his voters say, if just he would stop tweeting, everything would be okay. You know what I mean? Like while he was president, they would say that.
And they're not wrong, because the less he tweets, the better his numbers get. Like it just
It is. So what this is doing is this is allowing these people to see a different Trump before than they see now. And I will say to this point, if you listen to his stump speech now, it is vindictive. It's revengeful. He says, I am your retribution. And it's gone from in 2016, this is what I'll do for you, to this is what I'll do to them, right? There is an actual difference in his messaging this time around than there was in 2016. That is a legit difference. The other thing is, and at some point I'm going to write this up, there is this podcast I've been listening to called Shrinking Trump. This is a little bit of a tangent. And it's a couple of shrinks, like actual, you know, psychologists sort of looking at Trump and talking about like some of the signs that he's actually going through cognitive decline. And they're not just like, these are actual like people who are schooled and looking for, you know, verbal slips and the type of things that people do. If you look at him now, there are times when he's talking and he just slips into a second of like gobbledygook. Right. Mm-hmm. Just for a second. And then he gets back on track. And so he literally like also just isn't the campaigner that he was, because even though we may not have liked his message last time, he didn't slip into gobbledygook in the middle of trying to, you know, push it across in 2016. So, and I want to throw, and then I'm going to give you a chance because I think you have something to say, Marcos, but this is something now that Biden, this isn't just a one-off ad, right? Biden has now added this to his stump speech, and that's what I think makes it so significant. So like last night when he was talking about Trump being a convicted felon, even outside of the convicted felon part.
And using those words. Yeah.
Yeah. And using those words. And we'll get back to that in a second because we have more to say about that. But Biden literally said something snapped in this guy for real when he lost in 2020. It's literally driving him crazy, Biden said at one point. And then he said, this isn't the same Trump who got elected in 2016. He's worse, right? So this is something now that's like actually in Biden's stump speech that he is using. It's not just something they put in an ad and then they put it on the shelf and it goes away. They are prosecuting this campaign about Trump being different now than he was then. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Trump. Yeah, I just called you Trump. Don't fire me. Don't fire me. I seek to be forgiven.
Cognitive decline. Yeah. All right. The Trump of 2016, and maybe even 2020, but mostly 2016, he was an entertainer. There wasn't a lot at stake. Now he's fighting for his freedom because he thinks that if he wins the presidency, he gets a get out of jail free card on all these prosecutions that he's facing, and he mostly would. But in 2016, I don't know if he really thought he was going to win. He was branding. He was having fun. He was funny, not in the way we would consider funny, but in the mean at punching down at people and how hilarious. And his crowd, like, they loved it, right? Because, you know, punching at John McCain. Oh, he's a loser. He got shot down. Ha, 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 ha. Like, normal people are like, that's not funny. That's, in fact, kind of horrible. But Trump built an entire campaign and eventually won the nomination based on that sort of, like, entertainment style meanness. I didn't see it at the time, to be honest, because people would say that and I didn't get it. But now seeing the contrast between Trump today and Trump then, now I get it. Like, there was an appeal. There was sort of an excitement about Trump. Now it's just like, it's just grievance after grievance after grievance, and it's darkness, and it's everybody's out to get him, and it's conspiracy theories, and it's just really dark. And not only that, but he's like you said, the verbal stumbles, the mispronouncing names or confusing names. He shows up late to rallies now, which is like a thing that I see people complaining about in right-wing forums. People have to leave early. His talk gets so long and rambly that people leave early anyway, because they're not sticking around, and it's just not fun. Like, he's not fun in that way. So to me, what's really kind of interesting about this sort of calling him, he's going crazy, he snapped. This is all a setup for the debate in a couple of weeks, Carrie.
Like, for sure.
This is very, because you know, either Trump is going to, he's already on the verge of snapping, and Biden's going to use that in the debate. Obviously, he's going to use it in the debate. And it's going to be interesting to see how Trump reacts to it. My guess is that he's going to lose his shit, just validating the fact that he's going crazy. I actually think it's pretty high risk, because calling somebody crazy is, you know, it like Trump could get away with it all day and night because the rules are different for Trump, right? But when a Democrat uses sort of that kind of language, there's that double standard. So there's a bit of a risk there. I think it's a good one, though.
Biden hasn't literally said crazy, though. He said he snapped. And frankly, it works with Trump's biography, because there's nothing Trump hates more than losing. He can't stand losers. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that he lost the 2020 election, just, you know, getting under his skin and festering there and creating a very, you know, sort of unstable, off-kilter, pissed off individual is completely within the realm of reason for what we know about Trump and his MO, right? So it's, you know, snapped is a good word to use, so you don't have to use the word crazy.
Yeah, and remember, this is the Trump that did not want to honor World War II veterans, dead veterans, because they were losers, because they died. And he didn't want a disabled veteran on stage with him, because nobody wanted to see somebody in a wheelchair on stage with. Like, this whole losing thing is really central to his psyche, like you said. And so I'm really looking forward to Biden sort of wielding that. I sort of picture, you know, back in the old days, you had campaigns with the media guy, the television guy, the direct mail guy, the get out the vote field operation guy. Now you got like the psychiatrist guy.
Got the profiler, but, for sure.
God, yeah, like an old FBI profiler for
yes,
sure.
Yes, yes, that's what you have.
Squad of these people who are just completely psychoanalyzing Trump and figuring out ways to like poke.
Yeah.
So yeah. Makes things for a little more interesting.
Right. And this is a total aside, and then I'm going to go on, but a total aside, if you want to go on the Biden, if you're like to do Twitter or maybe Threads or something, I'm sure they have a Threads. the Biden campaign, they have started doing these like 6 or 7 second clips that kind of drive me crazy because I'm, you know, I guess I'm old now and I like to see everything in context, right? But these 6 or 7 second clips of where of Trump doing the gobbledygook, starting to say a word, not being able to finish it, and then just like moving on to the next part of his sentence, right? And at first I was looking at that stuff and I was like, why are they clipping just 7 seconds? I mean, I realize he stumbled there, but don't we all stumble every once in a while? When I started listening to this shrinking Trump thing, this podcast by these two psychologists, they were talking about how, I think there's a name for it. It's called like paraphasia or something like that. It's this thing you do when you, amidst cognitive decline, where you can't quite finish out a word, you can't quite wrap your mouth around it, your mind around it, or whatever, and then you just move on. And it doesn't seem like that big a deal, but it starts to pile up over time. Like when they're like, he can't get through a week without doing this at least once, if not twice. They said that on the podcast. So it's kind of interesting. So if you want to go to, you know, like Biden Harris HQ or whatever on Twitter or on X, or I'm sure they have the similar rapid response account on Threads and on, you know, Blue Sky, and they probably have a TikTok and all that. I know they have a TikTok, but anyway, you can find these little 6 or 7 second clips. And when I started thinking about that, I was like, oh, this actually cumulatively adds up to something. Like there's something going on here bigger than just he stumbled on a word. Okay, so. All right, let's move on. So that was actually, they started prosecuting that he's snapped campaign even before the conviction. Then the felony conviction comes down. And I have to say, there was actual reporting. This is going to drive a lot of you, our listeners, crazy. So just take a deep breath.
I'll model it.
Right. Very zen when I tell you this. Democrats and the Biden campaign were trying to figure out if they should really press on the convicted felon aspect of Trump getting found guilty on 34 freaking criminal counts. Unanimous by a jury, one of whom was a Trumper, like a Truth Social, got a bunch of his like news through
all
Truth
of it.
Social.
All of his news
yeah. through Truth Social. Even that person he is guilty as charged. And Democrats, as of like last week, just after this overwhelming criminal conviction of Donald Trump, were scratching their heads and being like, I don't know, what should we do with this? Okay, so there was that reporting out there. There was that reporting out there, right? And you're thinking, oh my God. You know, I mean, I think this is, Democrats have made this mistake before where they let the right go, like basically, you know, excuse my French, batshit crazy. And they, you know, indict the entire criminal justice system, say it's all a two-tiered system of justice that, you know, Trump has been a model citizen his entire life and just got caught on this one instance, right? And like, it was a fluke because he's been so, you know, like, so clean his entire life. Okay, that's crazy talk. But anyway,
wait. Had the right-wing punditry proclaiming what a piece of good news this was for Donald Trump.
Oh, like, sure, it was, for sure.
Oh, and he even raised some money. What great news! So, and then you have Democrats being like, "Was it good news? No, it wasn't good news for Trump. Yeah. He got indicted 34, not convicted." 34 right. counts. This is not good. And the reason you know it's not good is because Trump is screaming about the judges. The jurors are getting doxxed. They're attacking the entire legal system. If it was a good thing, they'd be like, thank you, jury, members of the jury, for indicting me. You've done me a great favor. That's right. What being good news for Donald Trump would look like, not this hysterical freakout. And even then, Democrats are like, wait, is it good for Donald Trump?
No, and
maybe we should proceed cautiously.
They thought somehow, I mean, sometimes they're still living in like the 20th century, right? They thought somehow that it might be too seedy to be like, you know, to be like weighing in on this and using it for political advantage, which is what you do when you try to win elections, right? So I think, you know, so I'm just going to move this along, but like there was that moment. And then this week, Biden started coming out, and he not only like last week, he did say, look, it is very dangerous what the Republicans are doing now, talking about how the American system of justice is rigged and is, you know, politicized, and that Democrats are weaponizing it and whatever. He's like, this is, Trump got a fair trial. You know, his defense put on its case. They'll get a chance to appeal. This is what the justice system looks like. It's the way it's supposed to operate it. And it's super dangerous. He said that last week. But this week, Biden has started saying that Trump is a quote unquote convicted felon. Right. Ooh. And he's actually talking about it. Yes. And thank goodness, because it is noteworthy. They should keep talking about it. But I will say here, this is a moment, because I read a lot of Democratic analysis. I listen to and read a lot of like center right, like anti-Trump center right analysis, primarily through the Bulwark, but off with other people too. And the center right folks were like, pray God Democrats use this, right? I mean, please, you know, they're like getting ready to like poke their eyes out. You know, they're like, please just Democrats use this, because it works in your favor. And also, like, I'm just add this. If you don't tell journalists that it's bad, that Trump is a convicted criminal, they get so flooded with the rhetoric from the right that it's, mm-hmm, not bad, and that it's good, and that Trump is winning, right? That it becomes a slanted playing field, right? A slanted playing field that is biased toward the right, because, you know, for some reason, Democrats have decided it's better to like duct tape their mouths shut, right? Yeah. Well, fortunately, it doesn't seem like they're doing that. But at the same time, there seems to be a convergence between what the Biden campaign seems to be concluding about prosecuting this case and what the center right organizations believe is true. And Republican Voters Against Trump, which is a part of like one of the many pies that Sarah Longwell has her paws in, right? Besides the Bulwark and the focus group and Republican Voters Against Trump. They create these ads, right? And most of them are Trump voters who have decided to vote against him. And they did a bunch of them in 2020. And now they're doing a bunch more in 2024. And they have like January 6th to work with, which they didn't in 2020. They now have him as a convicted felon to work with. So they've got billboards up right now in Arizona, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin that say, I'm a Trump vote. I was a Trump voter. I can't vote for a convicted felon. Okay. That's one message they're doing. But they also within like, I don't know, I think it was just a few hours after the verdict came down, but maybe it was within the first 24 hours, they cut the following ad.
Donald Trump loves cheating. He cheated on his wife with a porn star. He cheated his business by making fraudulent payments to keep her quiet. And he cheated in the election by never disclosing those payments. Now, Trump is a convicted felon after being found guilty by a jury of his peers for falsifying business records, covering those payments up, and committing a campaign finance violation. Donald Trump, cheater, felon, unfit to be president. Republican Accountability PAC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Okay. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so at the beginning of the ad, you know, if you're listening to the podcast, you didn't see it. They actually show him playing golf because he's a well-known golf cheater as well. So it was a nice little subtle additional dig before they got to like the real meat of the ad, which I really appreciate, those little flourishes, those little touches.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, yeah, and that's, you know, that's, I didn't even think about that, but it's so true because he so famously cheats while playing golf because he can't stand like not being like the best golfer and all that stuff. And
they just had two tournaments at Mar-a-Lago a couple of weeks ago, you know, instead of actually running for president, and he won both of them. Whoa.
who would have thunk it that all his like bootlickers would have like let him take first? So in the midst of that, they do say, and they say felon again at the end, but they also say convicted felon in the middle of it, right? And so this is a place where this, I think it's really interesting. A lot of times you know, even people who are coming from different partisan perspectives on how to defeat Trump have very different messaging. And this still might diverge a little bit, right? But there is a, but right now among the Biden campaign and seemingly Democrats and this these center-right organizations, I mean, you know, just to put a pin in this, like, or to emphasize it, Republican voters against Trump, they plan to spend $50 million in the swing states on advertising against Trump. So they're putting real money in. They're committing real money to this. And it's not just this convicted felon. I mean, I don't think that's the only thing that they're going to, the only ads they're going to put out, but they are putting real money into this. And I actually had a quick back and forth email with Gunnar Raymer, who's the political director of Republican Voters Against Trump. And what he said was, first of all, this clearly plays into a biography that a lot of squishy Trump voters are already concerned about, right? The conviction does. But the other thing he said was that among what they call sort of double haters or double, you know, dislikers, whatever you want to call them, people who aren't super excited about voting for either candidate and don't like their choices, is that up until this point, there has been far too much emphasis on Biden and his record. And what this does, what the convicted felon stuff does, is put the emphasis back on Trump. And that is a very important inflection point to make Trump the center of attention again in this election, because specifically among double doubters, they are going to...
Double doubters are those who don't like either one.
Right. They don't like either one. They don't like Joe Biden. They don't like Trump. They don't like them for different reasons, right? But they don't like them. And they are going to cast a vote that is a referendum against one of them, right? And the more of a spectacle Trump is, the more likely they're going to cast that vote against him, right? You don't want to be the last person that they're thinking about when they cast their ballot. Right.
Yeah.
So they are purposely like, it's that he's a convicted felon. It's perfect messaging. But on top of that, it is just a way to get Trump and his criminality and his unfitness back in the public eye, center stage, and just let him sit there and simmer. So,
yeah, I see that. Also, the other place where that actually is very effective is, in addition to the double doubters, young voters are proving to be a little sort of tough nut to crack, because they weren't politically sentient during the Trump years. Like, all they know is Biden. And so they were physically alive during the Trump horror years, but they weren't paying attention, didn't understand it, right? So by talking about Trump saying drink bleach to cure COVID, like, it's also educating voters who weren't paying attention because they were too young in that first Trump administration. So there's real value in that. But you're absolutely right. Both candidates are not popular. I mean, just objectively, the numbers for both are pretty down in the gutter. It is in the Democrats and Joe Biden's interest to make this a referendum on Donald Trump. Normally, it might be more difficult because usually it's a referendum on the incumbent. We have this sort of almost practically unprecedented situation where they're both kind of de facto incumbents. So, yeah, making it about Donald Trump. And, you know, the thing is, Donald Trump is so happy to make it about himself, too.
Like, it's absolutely.
Not, he plays along. Like, he's like, yeah, talk about me. And so I think we're going to benefit from that. So, Carrie, we're almost out of time. So do you have any last thoughts here?
Not really. I just wanted to ask you a question. Can you imagine a scenario where Trump's top campaign advisors were like, whatever you do today, don't make a spectacle of yourself?
And he'll go straight to Twitter or Truth or whatever the heck it is to make it just to show them who's boss, because nobody's going to tell him not to. I'm not kidding. There was a time when he was off of Twitter because he'd been banned and Truth wasn't around, and his numbers actually went up in that time period. Like, objectively, the less visible he is, the more popular he becomes. And so that's why you see, even in right-wing forums, which I frequent, where people are just like, could he just shut up? Like, we know where he stands on things. Like, he doesn't need to be an asshole every single day. But thankfully, you know, Mike Trump really is doing everything he can to help the Democrats win, you know, bragging about the abortion bans, putting contraception on the table. Like, all these things are going to play a role. And being a convicted felon is an absolutely gift, political gift.
Absolutely. Our producer, Walter, put this on. There are 37 countries that ban convicted felons from entering, and 38 if you include the U.S. So, like, literally, if he were to be, you know, if he were to be, and he can't expunge that record. I mean, he might be able to appeal it and, like, maybe get it overturned, but he can't expunge that record even if he wins of his own volition, right? So if he were a convicted felon, like, he wouldn't be allowed to enter into other countries. And you may think that this is, like, a kind of, like, you know, a point that's a little too fine for a lot of voters. I literally was reading a focus group, and one of the women said, you know, he's unfit for president. He can't even get the security clearances now based on being a convicted felon to, like, read through sensitive information. So that is a real thing for people. It's like, well, if we elect this guy, how can he really, like, inhabit the office in the right way if he's a convicted felon, when there's, like, all kinds of rules against him being able to access stuff and go into other countries and things like that?
Yeah, it makes a Republican's job. I mean, almost every single issue minus inflation, and Republicans are going to try to make this about inflation. Everything else points to the Democrats' favor. So again, the math, and anything that makes Trump's inability to grow his base of support, much less shrink it, is a problem for him. This is absolutely shrinking it. I don't think there's any other way to look at this. Otherwise, they wouldn't care so much. So that is our show for today. Thank you so much, Carrie. Thanks to Walter, who produces the show. Thanks to Perry, helping behind the scenes. And thank you, the viewer, listener, reader, for being part of Daily Coast. This community, this effort to save our democracy from the forces of MAGA, could not do it without you. Would not want anybody else by our side as we fight the good fight heading into November. So thank you so very much. Catch you all next week.